Hi, I'm Sian Owen and I'm here at the International Conference for Virtual Patients in Krakow in Poland. And I'm here with Rachel Elloway from the Northern Ontario School of Medicine in Canada. So first of all, Rachel, can you tell us about your line of research and what you're involved with?
Sure. So I've been working with virtual patients for about 7 or 8 years now. I was at the University of Edinburgh before coming to the Northern Ontario School of Medicine. I've been in Ontario for 2 years now. And the virtual patient research that we're doing in Edinburgh it translates extremely well to the Northern Ontario context. In fact, it actually strengthens it. In Northern Ontario, the Northern Ontario School of Medicine is the first new medical school in Canada for more than 33 years. Mm-hmm. We have a territory coverage of more than 1 million square kilometres. We have two main bases in Sudbury and Thunder Bay, which are 1,000 kilometres away from each other. And we teach in 172 sites across all of the north of the province, which means that we cover more than what technically, although it doesn't actually cross over the... Oh, so it does cross over the time zone. We actually do cover two time zones. We are so distributed that we need ways of connecting people together. But we also need to address things such as cultural aspects of medicine. So, for instance, working with Aboriginal peoples, Francophone communities, those kind of things. We have issues of being able to create assured and effective experiences in environments where some disease conditions just never present. And therefore, we need to have alternatives to be able to make up for those. And we also want to make our, we have a remit for this, to make our educational model very community orientated, very community accountable as well. And virtual patients talk to all those kinds of issues. We also have a drive, of course, to be innovative. And again, there's also an opportunity there. So the line of research we have going on in Northern Ontario at the moment is threefold. There's a major technical aspect of that. And that's looking about trying to break out of the bubble of a virtual patient. It's a single technology, it's a single web system, something like that. So we are looking to integrate them with, we are succeeding in integrating them with physical simulators, with clinical data sets, with clinical environments, with other kinds of representational tools such as light arrays and light surfaces, those kinds of things. We're interested in the telemetry, we're interested in the data that comes out of it, and we're looking at a much more holistic model of virtual patients. Most often, actually, interestingly, at the centre, because they're so adaptable, they create a good context into which you can connect lots of other things, but as part of a much larger systematic way of using simulation and other tools within creating a very technology-enabled, but not necessarily technology-overwhelmed approach to medical education. The second strand is around creating virtual patients and cases that reflect Canadian context. Canada has a population of about 35 million. We have the second largest landmass in the world. Most of our population is on a relatively small ribbon towards the US border, which in part reflects the climate and the geography of the country. But we are somewhat overwhelmed by American and by European cases, and there's a strong feeling in Canada, and particularly in Northern Canada, that we want to have cases that represent the things that we see in Northern Canada. You know, our kinds of Aboriginal peoples, the kinds of issues of a truly a dual language nation, even three language nation with the Aboriginal peoples, to reflect a lot of the cultural, the industrial aspects. So in Northern Ontario, there's lots of forestry, mining, a lot of natural first primary product industries, those kind of things.
Sorry, I was going to say, just to bring on to your presentation, because what you've talked about is the challenges involve accommodating all that variety on so many different levels, and that was one of the issues which you addressed in your presentation. What I wanted to ask was why not one system for a more standardised approach in creating virtual patients?
Why don't we just have one medical school or one university? Why don't we have one of everything? Because diversity and variety is important to us, that we don't have a causal mechanical model that says if you do this then this learning, this change in this individual come out. The context matters. For instance, in Northern Ontario, context matters for us a lot. We could be cheaper probably to train doctors in India or somewhere else like that and then bring them into and this will be true for anywhere in the West, but it's important that we actually do train them and we use people from the community to become doctors for the community. So context matters, variety is very important, and we're finding as the virtual patient developers around the world get together and work together more collaboratively, and EVIP is a classic example of that kind of model where people are working, who are bringing very different models to the table, that we're seeing that actually they're not just varieties of the same thing. They're often actually radically different. Different educational strategies call for different virtual patient designs, or at least they work better or worse given those different kinds of designs. And certainly, as we take this whole agenda forward, we're finding that, if anything, we'd actually like to end up with more kinds of systems. There may be certain systems that address certain issues that become the killer app for that particular area, but in no way is there going to be a single system that does everything, because the everything is so complicated. There's almost no part of healthcare education that virtual patients don't touch in some way or another, and therefore it would be have to be a system that covers all healthcare education. And although one or two people have had a run at that, they give up very quickly because it is such a wide and complicated set of issues, and they're so dynamic, so many different patterns interweaving, that really you want to allow people to have the best fit for their thing at that time and the ability then to move on and develop and adapt and change if they need to.
So flexibility is the key.
Flexibility and diversity.
Where do you see virtual patients heading? In which direction do you feel that they're moving?
I think they're definitely moving into the mainstream of healthcare education. They provide an opportunity to create valid and authentic settings by which you can then surface any kind of learning or assessment model. They can be as patient focused or as much as possible, as little as possible. They can be very didactic in terms of knowledge acquisition. They can be very much about rehearsal, experimentation, assessment, all these kinds of things. And therefore, they have a huge potential degree to be as big as, if not bigger than, problem-based learning or some of these other major movements in healthcare education, because they touch so many things and they are so easy. They're increasingly easy to use and adapt for these kind of contexts, and so much more powerful than traditional techniques. But also I see them blurring in and becoming more integrated and more part of and blurring into other things like simulation, and just generally looking at an information environment, an information sphere that we move through. And virtual patients will be a more visible part of that thread, but they'll be part of the thread. Maybe one of the things that helps weave a lot of the other things together, but just part of a continuum that we're still seeing to be as being developed at the moment.
And also during your presentation, you talked about some ideas that were very interesting, for example, virtual patients for patients and virtual hospitals and clinics. Let's talk about virtual patients for patients. What would be the value of that?
Again, I mean, partly that we have yet to really push the boundaries on that, but certainly in terms of chronic care, quite often a patient will be given some instructions by the doctor, maybe a leaflet, and they kind of have to work it out on their own. And quite often this involves complicated drug regimes, but changes in behaviour, changes in many things, the way they run their lives, just so they can survive or manage their developing illness as best they can. And therefore having some virtual patient that they can go refer to, play it as a game or play it. What happens if I don't take my meds today? Let's go down that path. That's not very good, so I can come back and try that. We're a game culture now in the West anyway. Games are a part of how we do so many things. And in a way, they always have been, but we're kind of a bit more honest and a bit more open about it now. So it's a very accessible, very interrogatable way of understanding a patient's condition. So somebody like me, but then you can take it further that they could also create games around all virtual patients around their own experiences, about their own narratives, their own understanding. I saw my doctor today and he didn't really talk to me. And what did that mean to me? That could be cathartic for the individual, but also helpful to the healthcare service to better understand what they're doing.
So potentially there's two main aspects to this. There would be bridging the gap effectively between the patient and the healthcare professional, so that the patient is more likely to adhere to the medication and to understand the condition, and also the psychological impact, the patient coming to terms with the condition and understanding it and making sense of it too.
Right. So it's almost like, I mean, TV or radio have done that to an extent. You get good documentaries about somebody in my condition, so they'll say, well, and this person did this, but this goes so much further, because then they can explore different routes, explore consequences, and also help to translate and understand what can be very complicated or somewhat bewildering language, particularly if they've just received bad news. They may not be particularly focused on all the implications of the diagnosis, and therefore they can work with this over time. But also they can maybe work with other people who have a similar condition. You're in a multiplayer environment, so they can maybe support each other. I mean, this is largely speculative. A number of people I know who, and including my lab, have looked to develop this, but we haven't got a substantial program underway. There have been some small things done, but nothing on a large scale yet.
But it's all very exciting.
It is hugely exciting. There's so much potential. And in terms of, we're seeing more and more that information-based resources have major impact on patient outcomes, and we would anticipate, it would at least be the hypothesis, that using this kind of methodology would have similar effects on patient outcomes. And again, if, you know, if this becomes part of primary care, then we're in a different place altogether. We certainly very much all quickly address the other issues about physicians and other healthcare professionals not necessarily having a good grasp on what this means if it becomes part of their armamentarium for conducting their profession.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
Great, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you today.